All right, everybody, we'll go ahead and get started with our media availabilities. We got a really good one here to kick it off. Johnny Bench, Big Red Machine Captain, Reds Hall of Famer, and also Baseball Hall of Fame, and has been called the greatest catcher in baseball history. Johnny, we're thrilled to have you here with us. You got a new title for this weekend, Co-Grand Marshal of the Food City 500.
Working on it. I'm really excited. This is going to be a great opportunity. I was here in 2014. Got to spend a little time with my Blue Emu people here who are based here. But the fact was that Richard Childress is a good friend of mine. I've worked with Richard Petty and Jeff Gordon and I were on the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And I'm a big fan of NASCAR. I've always have been. I admire the fact. And the only problem I have is I have trouble getting in the car. You know, they don't make cars big enough for me for catchers who can't turn sideways. I was at Daytona and they said, "You want to take a lap around?" I said, "I'd love to." He said, "All right, crawl in the window." I said, "I'll just stay here in the pit because I could not crawl in that window. I've never touched my toes in my life, and here I was catching for 17 years. So, any questions? Okay, thank you. I really enjoyed being here.
We got Claire B. Lang back here on the right.
Claire B. Lang, great to have you here. Talk about what you've thought of fast cars. Do you have a particular driver, and what's the fastest you've driven? What about the sport of NASCAR?
Well, I've done the laps at Daytona, and I didn't get to go around here. This would have been probably this has always been my dream racetrack. I mean, it's just the idea of, 15 seconds around, for a lap and everything else, and to see the excitement in there. And I haven't been to very many tracks, but I'll tell you, I've been to Indy, I've been to Daytona, and I've really enjoyed the fact. But, the conditioning, and I get caught up in the fact that, I'd like to say team sport because so many people are involved in it. But the fact is that we've actually done some neurovisual studies on especially like the pit crew and how the changing of a tire, the changing the unity of which they do. I say there is no I in team. I think it's all I's because you better have the best individual at each position. And these guys are amazing. I mean, the timing and the number of repetitions, as you all know more than I do, the repetition they have to do just to try to pick up that half second. And so I'm a big fan of all. I hate the guy that's in the front to lose. I mean, I don't know. It's just something about whether any sport, like I'll watch the Masters today, and I hate to see if Rory or if it's DeChambeau or if there's somebody coming out of the pack. I think you get heartbroken for losing because we lost two World Series before we won. And so it's just like, I don't want to say, this is my guy. I mean, Earnhardt and my gosh, I mean, and Richard. I mean, Richard, if you meet King, the King, I mean, it's just, he's just one of a kind. You just fall in love with him when you meet him and everything else. But, you always have those reckless on-fire drivers that just go crazy and do stuff. So I've loved the sport forever. I've just, I never was one with a lead foot, I guess, more than anything. You had your hand up?
Go ahead, Jeff. And then we'll come over here to Zach.
Johnny, what was your first reaction when you heard about the Speedway Classic being played here at Bristol? And then the second question I got for you, what made those Big Red Machine teams so special?
Well, what I heard was because I've got a group of guys I call my breakfast bunch, and then I've got people from Cincinnati. So about 20 of us went out to the Field of Dreams out in Iowa to watch that. And then we're trying to figure out what could possibly be our next one. I've been a part of Hope for the Warriors for 20 years. It's a group that, and so when they started talking about building the field at Fort Bragg, I actually have a picture in my dining room that my friend took of how the Corps of Engineers built that ballpark at Fort Bragg. I think the Braves were the one that played there as well. So the idea is that they can bring baseball to a new era, new group, a new gender, but also to a location. I mean, these are people in this. I grew up in the country. I grew up in a town of 600 people. I mean, we're diehard baseball fans. We're diehard sports fans. And to think that we can make it unique, I think baseball's really smart in order to bring baseball into a new type of thing where we make it new, we make it exciting. And so for me, that was the first thing I did was I heard about it. And next thing I know, next day I was on the phone getting tickets for the, you know, the Motor Speedway, the Speedway Classic, August 2nd. So we're a group of us, about 20 again. We've already rented a house. We got 20 guys coming again. And they're, and I can't even tell you the number of guys that after they did it said, I didn't know this was on my bucket list. And part of it is the fact of the camaraderie of what it is. And I guess, again, your question about the Big Red Machine was, the thing was, wherever I go, people will say, I was a Reds fan, I was a Giant fan, I was a Dodger fan, I was a Cub fan. And then they will say, but we really admired and respected you. Because there were, and then they name the team. You know, they go, they start with Tony and Joe and Davey and Pete, and then they go George, Cesar, and Kenny, and they'll name the players on the field. Now, we left an impression, and that's what it's all about, is an impression of professionalism, of the fact that we played together. Now, Sparky would call us in a lot of times and ask us what I thought about getting Bill. We'd say no. What about Jack? Yes. Because we were a judge of talent. We were able to say, yes, this guy could fit in. And it's not necessarily in the starting lineup. I mean, it's hard to break that lineup, but it was guys that needed, like the Merv Redmonds and the Terry Crowleys and the Doug Flynns and relief pitchers. We needed people in positions to make a difference when called upon. Bill Plummer was my backup catcher. He was ready every day if I wasn't playing. And so that was the thing about it. You know, and you talk about Pete, Joe, Tony, and myself, you're talking about four of the greatest players ever at their positions, and they proved it. And then George Foster hit 52 home runs. So we actually, I felt like we brought guys up to a higher level because we had a high standard. And if you have a high standard, you set it, and then everybody has to stay up with it. Because we didn't ask any special quarter. We said, I don't know, I got to have a private plane, I got to have my own room, I got to have a suite, I've got to have... No, we didn't ask for it, so they couldn't do it. So the idea was every day it was a labor of love of going out there and playing the game, and we did it back in those days about as good as you can.
All right, we got Zach over here, then we'll come back to Steve, and then Rod. Go ahead, Zach.
Zach Sturdiello, NASCAR.com. Knowing that you were here in 2014, you've seen what the aura of this place is.
Oh, yeah.
And felt that. Knowing that this place is going to be hosting an MLB game, what atmosphere are you anticipating this place to bring to that sort of event?
Well, I'm going to ask Richard Petty if he'd make a couple laps around the infield just to make really get the excitement going and everything else. I mean, there's nothing more exciting than this race. I mean, when you get down to the last laps and all the things and I hope it's an atmosphere. You know, I hope it's a, you know, it all starts with the fact that you try to convince people to come to this event for the baseball game with one thing in mind, the uniqueness of it, the novelty of it. And yes, they can pull for the Reds, they can pull for the Braves, but they can hopefully pull for baseball. To think, okay, I mean, for my family today, I mean, my son, he's 15. He wants a Raptor 150 if anybody got one or knows a dealer that can get it. And it's 750 horsepower. He said, no, Dad, I don't speed. It's just there if you need it. Yeah, it's when he got here, it was the excitement. I mean, he's never been he's a car fan, obviously, and understands it, but he's never really it. But now to be here and be a part of it, well, that's what I want to hopefully transcend into the game. Is just that people come and with, you know, outside. I want the activities outside. I mean, that's going to set the tone as to what's going to be inside. We make it to where it is. We talk about the excitement, the fun of it. And if we can create a fun and atmosphere and almost like a parade atmosphere type of thing where, you know, we're going to a party and let's show up with a good attitude and let's really enjoy the game.
All right, go to Steve and then we'll come to Rod.
Steve Schweitzer with the Lasco Press. Jenny, when you look out there, out the door today, with all of those trucks parked in the infield here, what would you say to a fan with regard to how on earth are they going to put a baseball stadium in there?
Oh, dude. I mean, right now, that's why I came over here and I had them take a picture of this and what AI can do, of course, of trying to put that field And they do it. I mean, my son's going to be a, you know, computer engineer, computer science engineer. He's starting to do that. But I think all the time about the capabilities that some of these guys are and their brains and the architecture and seeing even clover leaves on the highway. I think about guys that do amazing things. You guys are wordsmiths. You guys know you have your brain cells holding hands, hopefully, when you really get down to it and doing what they do. So, I mean, to imagine what this is, I don't have any doubt in my mind that this won't come off as just one of the most pristine, one of the greatest looking fields you would think that you're doing it. And I played in enough minor league, you know, fields back in the day. I mean, you know, it was so now to think that this will be at another level. MLB wants to do this at another level. So they're committed to making this really happen to at a major league type level. I mean, can you be Dodger Stadium? Can you be Wrigley Field? Can you be Fenway Park? No, but I mean, can you make an atmosphere of a one of a kind thing? And it's going to be worth it almost. I've got my tickets already, just so you'll know. I started the day I heard about it. I used my, you know, as my family sometimes says, it's good to be used sometimes, just to get in on the list. And so I'll guarantee you sometime, even though I'm going to be down inside, sometime I'm going to try to go up to the top of that stadium and look down. And I want the picture of that, even if I don't make it up there because I got AFib, and so I don't want to climb all those damn stairs anyway. But it's like I want to see it. I want to see it from the perspective of how brilliant it is and the fact that baseball is doing something like this.
All right, we'll go to Rod over here.
Johnny, Rod Mullins with Augusta Free Press. The question I have for you is this. In your opinion, do you believe that the selection process to Cooperstown is more of a popularity contest, or is it based on career stats? And the reason why I'm saying that is because two Reds out of five that I was looking at on Reds.com are not in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, and that's Vada Pinson and also Dave Concepcion. What's your thoughts?
A little break in the action here. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. That's what the hell it is. I could use one right about now with that one in. All right, here's the deal. You got to vote? You vote to Hall of Fame for race car driving? I mean, if it's the media, I mean, the guys who have covered the sports are making these decisions, you know. I got 96.4%. Where in the hell were the other 3.6%? What did I do wrong? You know, and Aller is acting like, you know. But it is totally based on merit. Now, there's some writers, new writers that came in and do this stuff, and they have a different opinion. What hurt a lot of players was the fact that they went from the National League to the American League after free agency. And so if you guys over here are American Leaguers, and these are National Leaguers, you saw this guy play for all those years. He was a Hall of Famer. But he comes over here, and the American League says, we saw him at the end of his career. He wasn't that good. So all of a sudden, you're not voting. It is based on merit. As far. The only thing there's a popularity contest might be the Veterans Committee to some respect. But I've sat in on some of those veteran committees. And, I mean, it is like Benihana of Tokyo. They'll chop you up in a heartbeat. You know, and this guy, I always heard when I got up there that there were guys like Bob Felon, Robin Robertson, guys, and Frank Robinson, and says, this isn't for the very good. This is for the great. And that's what they've tried to maintain. I think there were guys, I know there was guys back in the early days when the Veterans Committee would vote, and there were 10 or 11 guys, and they were all related, but they were good old boys and everything else would say, hey, let's get old Bill a vote. And then wound up all 10 of them voted for him, and there was always some question. In fact, at one time, I think there were more in the Veterans Committee was voted in than by the election committee by the writers. So it's not a popularity contest, I can tell you that. But there will be writers who have a grudge against somebody. I mean, writers would never do that, would they? Not that I know of, but Ted Williams hit 406 the year that DiMaggio won the MVP and the two Boston writers did not vote for him anywhere on the ballot. So that was an unpopular vote as far as you can say, was it popular? No, it was very unpopular because they didn't do it. I think it's been really fair in so many aspects. And then baseball, the Hall of Fame tries to make sure that nobody got overlooked. And that's why they have, but Veda Penson was my locker mate. As smooth and as clay and everything else. And then the next guy will come along and say, well, this guy's in. You know, would you have David Concepcion over Phil Rizzuto or Pee Wee Reese, or will you start comparing? And today, there is so many analytics out there, and these guys will send, they'll bombard these writers with information that they never would have thought. I mean, there are, if you look at stats today, there are guys that were on the ballot the last two or three or four years, you could actually make a case that they were better than Tony Gwynn. I mean, so I guess it's just how you want to break down the analytics and how far you want to go with it to prove that they are more worthy than not. And I feel it's just, you know, until there's a better way. But we'll have our favorites. You have a favorite. I have David Concepcion as a favorite. And when I was in the meeting, I talked about David Concepcion. Okay, and Ozzie Smith is sitting there. And I said, Ozzie, if you don't come into the league, Davey wins 10 gold gloves. Now he's in the Hall of Fame. But when you have Johnny Bench catching, Bill Plummer's not going to make the team. So, I mean, you wind up saying, well, if you look at it this way, he was this. If you look at it that way, so there's going to be guys that are overlooked. That's what the Hall of Fame has done, trying to have a different vote from the past. And they get it as right as they can get it. But I'm sure there's, you know, people that say, I don't think he deserves it. We look at it, you know, in one way from the other, and we wind up saying, no, I can't vote for him. And the other guy says, I definitely have to vote for him because they see him in their mind of how he compared. But it's all a mental decision on all these great writers' ballots.
All right, really quick, let's close it out with just this. You say you're a fan of the sport. Who's your favorite driver, and you got a pick for the Food City 500?
Well, I mean, because Richard's such a good friend of mine, I'd like to see Dylan win. But you know, and just as a he's won before. I mean, but it's like here. But you know, I'd like to see Richard Petty win another race. Was that political or what? No, he's the king. Is it? And you know, Earnhardt and all those crashes with their hair on fire and everything else. And there's Danny Sullivan's a really good friend of mine, of course. And he was saying, you know, you got to race aggressively because we were just having fun with it. And I said, you got to race aggressively. You got to be on the lead lap for the last 100 laps, and you got to stay damage free. Now, Danny was, and we were talking about the Formula One race they have down in Miami, and there's not a lot of parking because one of our friends their company is talking about being a sponsor. And so he said, yeah, but the racetrack is basically on the outside of the stadium, so they have problems with parking. So we went down to the Miami Open, the tennis tournament the other day, and we pulled out, and instead of turning right, we went left. And hell, I was right there on the track. I was flying. I had the flag right in view, man. I was crossing the finish line and do it. So that's the closest I ever come to it. But you guys keep doing what you're doing, and I admire you and respect you guys for your motivation for what it is and to be able to cover such a great, great sport that it is. And so, but thank you for my time.
Yeah, we appreciate your time. Thank you for being here today. Johnny Bench. All right, now we are continue with our availabilities. We will now we're going to change gears a little bit, literally. We're pleased to have Ida Zetterstrom with us. She is an NHRA Top Fuel driver. She competes in the NHRA series, and she'll be back here for the Super Grip NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals in June, competing with Maynard Racing. She is the 23 FIA European Top Fuel champion. She also used to race motorcycles, really fast on motorcycle too, over like 215 miles an hour.
Yep.
And her top speed in Top Fuel is 334 miles an hour. And welcome, Ida. Your thoughts here. Have you been to a NASCAR race before? And I know you've been around the property quite a bit here. What are your thoughts?
This is my first ever NASCAR race, so it's actually very cool. I mean, I've been at a racetrack since I was 3 weeks old, and I've been in different forms of racing. I actually worked as a mechanic in a Porsche Sprint Challenge Cup team for a year, but I've never been to a NASCAR race. It's not as common in Sweden, where I'm from, obviously, so it's very cool to see. I was here for the NHRA race at the Bristol track last year and had a fantastic time. I absolutely loved the atmosphere. So coming over here and seeing this track and this race over here, it reminds me a whole lot of that atmosphere. And I'm loving it so far, but I can't wait for the cars to go around tracks.
And what is your schedule for the rest of the year? You know, are you full-time moving forward after this weekend in Vegas?
So basically, I have a 10-race schedule this year. So NHRA has 20 races for the championship. I am not fully funded at the moment, so we're still actively searching for sponsors and partners to be able to expand our schedule for this year, but more importantly, find the right partners to be able to race full-time next year and for the years to come, because we want to be out here chasing championships. That's what it's all about. And right now, we're chasing records and Wallys, but most importantly, we're chasing that funding to be able to do that.
We'll go over here. We got a question from Jeff Birchfield.
Yeah, I have the car you're racing at Bristol this year. Is that the same one that Tony Schumacher raced to the victory last June?
It's not the same car. So Tony's car is still another car. When we were building my program last year as he was racing, we built a car and a team for me, and that's the same car I will be in, and it's the team that I raced with last year. But obviously, it's the same team. So we have a lot of synergy there and obviously a lot of data from this track over here, and I look forward to having that on my schedule.
And what stood out for you as far as Bristol Dragway compared to some of the other tracks where you visited last year?
Well, first of all, like, it's just so scenic. Like, when you came in there, the way where you're actually lining the cars up and you can see people up on the side of the hill basically camping, and you can see this beautiful view. It obviously makes for some great photos, but it's also very cool being in the car and kind of feel that feeling. I feel like it amps up your excitement when you're at a track like that that actually looks this beautiful. The sound is a little bit extra since it's another type of arena. Its sound doesn't really have anywhere to go, which means that for the fans that are in the grandstand, it's kind of an extra experience. And overall, I just loved how the fans really seemed to love that we were there. They were the grandstands were packed, but also the pits. You know, obviously NHRA has an open pit, so every ticket is a pit pass, so the guys could come down and watch us range between the cars. And we had so many fans in the pits throughout the whole week, and that also includes your excitement gets even higher when you feel that support, let's say.
So, Ida, talk a little bit about the difference between, I know Top Fuel racing in Europe is really big. How does it compare to the United States?
Yeah, so it's basically same, but different. I mean, the cars over in Europe, they're cars that have raced here before. Basically, every car that actually races in Europe in the classes of Top Fuel Funny Car is usually a car that have raced here professionally in NHRA. And then at a point, the teams over here have gotten a newer car and basically sold it to Europe. So I raced a car that had previously ran in NHRA, but it was a little over 10 years old, while over here, the car's a little newer. So that's part of it. We have smaller budgets in Europe. Usually the parts that we use, it's used parts from US that they sell over to Europe, and that's what we go through. The teams that work there, we have smaller teams. I had a core group of four guys working on my Top Fuel car in Europe, and everybody did it just because they loved it. Nobody's paid. We slept on air mattresses in the trailer, and everybody took time of work to come and do it. And it's cool to see that passion for the sport. Obviously, we're not as quick and fast as over here in US. I held the European records of 377 at 321 miles per hour over there. So not exactly like over here, but very impressive when you're considering that it's older parts, older cars. We have a shorter schedule. We have between 6 to 8 races a year in the top fuel classes. The tracks don't have as many people running at it, usually only one race per year. And we don't get the chance to get as much data as possible. There's no test sessions in the same way as this over here. When I licensed in Top Fuel and made my first ever passes, it was in front of 40,000 people in the grandstand because there's no such thing as renting a track and doing it by yourself. So, yeah, it's a big difference.
We always like to ask Top Fuel drivers, and we always get a varying response of what it's like when you're inside the cockpit and you hit the throttle on 12,000 horsepower. What's it like from your view there?
So everybody asks that, and I wish that I could give a really, you know, coloring answer on exactly how that feels. But the thing is, you have, like you said, 12,000 horsepower behind you, and you're controlling a car that's very tall, very long, and it feels like the rear end of the car is trying to outrun the front of the car. You're making small corrections all the time, or you're taking in what that car is doing. So there's not a lot of time to actually feel what's happening. You're feeling what the car wants you to do, and you're actually thinking about the driving a whole lot more than the experience in the car. If I compare it to being on a roller coaster, I'm the one screaming and like loving that feeling and feeling that adrenaline. I don't feel that in the car in the same way, just because you're so concentrated and 100% of your concentration have to go into controlling that car. So for me, the adrenaline kicks I get, it's from turning the wind lights on. That's what does it for me. It's not just the 344 miles per hour down track, but obviously that doesn't hurt either. It's really fun.
Any other questions for Ida? Kelly?
It is tough. It's definitely, and it's a great question because obviously as a I still call myself a rookie driver in Top Fuel. Yeah, I won the championships over in Europe, but this is a complete different car, and many of the tracks I've never ran at before. I don't have that many runs in this car, so I feel like right now I need as much seat time as possible, and that's exactly what I'm not getting when I'm on the sideline. So mentally, it's hard, but also for us to collect the data we need, and obviously coming out there competing with other people that have had more chances at perfecting their art on reaction times, just feeling how the car is feeling down track. We are still changing things in this car for it to fit well for me and for me to feel perfectly in this car. But when you're constantly changing things and you're going to the track, because we don't have a whole lot of testing opportunities, especially when we're on a lower budget right now, I do feel like we are a little bit behind all the time right now. We're still running with the pack. I mean, we qualified 9th when we were in Phoenix, and we've been running well, but I want us to be higher. I want us to level up. And what we're trying to do with this time off is trying to really take it to find where we can find a little bit extra edge, where obviously we want to be at the track and we want to try everything there. But right now we're going through other things in the shop. I know some things that we wanted to do in the cockpit for me to feel a little more comfortable. And those are the kind of things that we have time to do on the off time, basically, when we're not in the car. But yeah, I will say, I feel like for me to hit my peak as a driver over here in US, it's seat time. I mean, that's what you need. And obviously as a team, you need the track time for the data. So I really hope that we will be able to add more races this year to kind of feel like we can bridge that gap and get closer to the lead of the pack. But I know we have it in what we have in the car. We're showing really good numbers. We just need more time to get on track.
Any other questions? All right. We appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us here at the race, and we look forward to seeing you race over across the street here at the Thunder Valley in a few months.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.